Hello and welcome to episode 153 of What Most People Think, and I hope you are enjoying the frills and spills of the Tory leadership race. Just to anybody that listened to the bonus Boris resignation special that I put out the weekend, two predictions already come true. Ben Wallace, I said that he'd pull out for reasons I couldn't possibly discuss because the What Most People Think legal team are a bit edgy in and around that. And then Penny Morden, who I said you might see start to adapt her fairly woke views on trans rights, certainly within the conservative context. And lo and behold, Penny's views are transitioning too. So keep an eye on that as we go. We do have a special guest this week, very special guest. We normally see him for the Christmas shows, but I thought I'd bring him in for the half-year show. It is Ramesh Ranganathan. Welcome back to the show.
Jeff, thank you so much for having me, man. It's last time I came on the show, you gave me my my trophy. What's the official title? The Cuss Count. That's it. Cuss Count trophy. It's got pride of place in my office. So thank you very much for that.
Well, you know, after that, it was retired.
Yeah, because you didn't think it could be beaten.
It couldn't be beaten. And then also, there was a really dismal period where I tried to have another idea because I thought it was a winner, you know, having a returning feature. And I come up with something that long-term listeners remember briefly called the Erm Curve, which was let's just track how many times people say Erm. And wasn't as entertaining, I have to say. And also, there was a slight feel from a couple of guests that it was sort of trying to trip them up and put pressure on them.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to come to your podcast to play Just a Minute, do you? Do you know what I mean? But I don't know. What do you think about swearing? Because like, I do the Wolf and Owl with Big Tom Davis, and we swear a lot on that. Because the problem is, and I think it's a similar problem with you, is that we're both swearers. So what happens is, if you're a swearer and you're talking to a non-swearer, what happens is just naturally, you kind of bring it down a little bit. But when you're with somebody that you feel comfortable about swearing around, what happens is you both seem to kind of subconsciously egg each other on.
Yeah.
So I don't know how, I don't find swearing offensive in the slightest, but we've had complaints on our podcast about the number of F-bombs we drop on it.
Well, I think it's the nature of the way that it's said, isn't it? Like there's the invective behind it. If fuck is used as a comma, people generally tend not to notice it. You know, if you're trying to remember something and you go, what's that fucking thing? You know, like, there's a very different to go. You know, there's a way that people swear in British gangster films where they go, don't be so fucking stupid. Even then, like, that would annoy people hearing that.
Yeah.
Because there's invective behind it. So it's...
My problem is that I actually weirdly use fucking for sometimes. So I might be going, so it's this fucking... guy. Do you know what I mean? So I do that quite a bit.
But let's see how we go. We spent quite a lot of our swearing quota already, I think.
Yes, we have done. Yeah.
But those don't count. Let's try. No. I mean, let's just try it as an exercise
to not swear for the duration of this.
Yeah, and chastise each other when swearing does happen.
Okay. All right. Yeah. No, I'm happy to do that. I feel like that could be a good experiment.
Unless it cramps us so obviously comedically, then we'll just ditch it.
Yeah, okay, fine.
I think that's the most likely outcome. Yeah. And one thing I would say is that we were talking the other day, and like a lot of people close to you, I expressed very heartfelt concern about your workload. You know, you're a busy guy, and we spoke about that for a while, and then you offered very briefly to be on the podcast, and I jumped on it really hard, drilled
it. Bear in mind, let's be absolutely crystal clear about this. When I said to you that it's partly because of, it's a combination of factors. It's COVID delaying shows being made. But in addition to that, it's an ongoing sort of imposter syndrome that I have to deal with because of that, you know, my workload is at the moment is a little bit full on. So I was talking to you about that. And you said, you sort of gave me some very sage advice about taking time with the family and, you know, relax. Mm. And, you know, you've got to a point now, Ramesh, where, you know, you've got to think about yourself, look after yourself, you know, maybe he's back. And then I mentioned in the podcast and you couldn't have given a shiny shit about my workload.
I mean, had the eye calendars out immediately and kept mentioning it three or four times before we got off that Zoom call.
Yeah. And also, in addition to that, you actually did a thing where you, I don't know if you're aware that you did this, but you loaded extra kind of emotional pressure onto it by going, do you know what? I wasn't sure what I was going to do for the podcast, but now, God, I'm really excited that you're doing it. Thanks so much for doing it. It's really good that you've agreed to do it, man. That's going to be really great. So that was, you know, how could I pull out of it at that stage? It was awful.
No. Like I say, I really care about your workload unless there are possible projects involving both of us, in which case I think you've just got to take the opportunities while they're there because they might go away, let's be honest.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I've heard a lot of interviews with you, and it does annoy me where there's a certain kind of interviewer, sometimes very high-profile radio host, that mention how busy you are and seem like really annoyed by it. Are you conscious of that? When people sort of go, I mean, you're everywhere, Romesh. You're taking their work. It's not you're not operating in their spheres.
Yeah, I know I actually because it does, to be honest with you, a lot of interviews get open like that. And especially when they're doing the intro, do you know what I mean? He's done this, he does this, you can see him on this. You can basically see him everywhere. Like a lot of intros are like that. And sometimes it's people being kind of supportive and cool. But other times you do sort of feel like what they're suggesting is that maybe you need to step back a little bit. When I was a teacher, like, you know, obviously, you know, I did love being a teacher. But one of the big things that I hadn't realised when I moved into comedy and really wanted to make it is that with jobs like that, you sort of know, providing that, you know, you don't do anything with any sixth formers, that you're going to have that job for a long time. Do you know what I mean? And so it's sort of, you don't have the ongoing pressure of like, is this going to be all right next year or whatever? Do you know what I mean? Whereas with what we do, I mean, Flo, my agent, has stopped me doing this now because she said, you need to stop doing this. But for a while, after Christmas, my first email to Flo would be, is it over yet? Do you know what I mean? Because you sort of look to the next year. You sort of get to the end of the year. And also, I know that it's such an arbitrary, like, fabricated thing, but the end of the year, I'd always approach the end of the year thinking, well, I've had a good year, but something might happen at midnight on the 31st of December that means that that's over, that magic has gone or whatever, and next year it's going to be a nightmare. So
you don't have that. I mean, the thing with teaching is, how often do you hear about a school shutting down because of a lack of clients? Like, there's a sort of like recession in teaching. Like they laid off loads of science teachers at the local comp. It's absolutely brutal. The latest round of voluntary. I mean, I know, I'm not saying it doesn't ever happen, but it by and large, teaching is always sort of a growth industry. Is it well paid enough? Probably not. No. Teachers moan a lot about what could otherwise be a simple job? In my view, yes.
I would say, listen, I've got a lot of respect for teachers, and it was I was never more stressed in my working life than I was when I was a teacher. What I would say is, my experience of a teaching workforce and their response to any kind of change was just unbelievable. I mean, anything, bearing in mind that the nature of the job is changing at all times. You're often preparing kids for jobs that in now, if you're a teacher, you're often preparing kids for jobs that don't exist yet, right? And so you'd have to, within that remit, sort of expect that you are going to have to make changes, right? things are going to have to move. Otherwise, you're not doing your job properly. Regardless of that, anytime something new was rolled out, there may be a coursework change or there's going to be an increased level of accountability for assessment or whatever, literally, as that information was being delivered, the murmurs of discontent would overwhelm the speaker. It was
You realise, like, how you can unseat a prime minister. I learned that in teaching, because you realise that the groundswell of opinion, the amount of people that you need to keep on side, and teaching is essentially a job with about, in your average sort of secondary school, there's about 150 backbenchers, essentially. And like, I mean, and you'll have seen this at a staff briefing when a head teacher's lost the room. And like, you just see the fear in their eyes as they're trying to talk, or just suggesting that you know, there's something quite reasonable. So, for example, if there's like a school-wide delay on getting reports in, and all the teachers, it's really weird with teachers. Teachers never think that they should have to write reports. I don't know what process of feedback they think that parents should know what the fuck their kids are doing at, but they resent maybe the frequency with which reports are done. But I always thought, like, you know, I mean, if you knew your kids, write in a couple of sentences. And if not, I mean, I don't know about you, maybe this is breaking the trade secret. I eventually put a Word document with a sort of bank of phrases on that I could just cut and paste if
well, that, struck, well, The thing is that that was a school policy when I taught. They had like a, they had like for certain reports, not for the end of year ones. The end of year ones you'd have to like generate something completely. But like for some of the reports, you'd have a bank of different. I mean, they were extensive, right? Yeah. But they were a bank of comments. So what happened is like you'd enter 3B, 4A, 5C, 6D, and then it would just come up with a paragraph of like, with those statements put together, and. And like it's funny because I know what it's like to be a teacher. And, but, you know, look, the truth is you're under the cosh, right? And reports never come at a good time. So you're often sort of, it's often midnight and you're sort of sitting at your laptop trying to get this stuff done. The level to which I forget about that when I'm reading my children's reports, right? Mm. Having known what it's like to be on the other side, the amount of gravitas I give to any word used in my children's reports is just absolutely insane. It's like I've forgotten. It's like I've forgotten what it was like to be doing these. Do you know what I mean?
And you go, "What? So Seb's not top marks for communique, yeah? Do you know what I mean? Geese is one of the best orators I've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah.
He just does his freestyle. He does it without notes.
Sorry. Lack of enthusiasm. Does that mean constantly got a glint in his eye of a thirst for learning? Is that what you mean?
We're going to talk about a lot of stuff this week. We talk about the Tory leadership race. I was going to then try and tag that back to education. They're going, I guess, you know, they'll have a lot of views on it, but it doesn't need that. So it's a podcast. Yeah. It's a loose.
Just do it like the one show. No segue. Just get straight into it.
Okay, Auschwitz. the Tory leadership race. We'll be talking about like what's the developments, who's dropped out. Some of the diversity, well, I don't think there is an issue with diversity. I think it is very diverse, but that is creating an issue for some people on the left. Mm-hmm. And then I wanted to talk to you about, like, kind of, you know, workload stuff, you know, as a bloke, being busy. This is the part of our life where we're very busy. But also specifically, I think people would be interested to hear about sitcoms, you know, like the scale of... I think a lot of people aren't aware of how much work goes into them at every single level. So we'll come to that later in the show. But just want to mention, we have our first female board members, Romesh, the board of What Most People Think. I put out the shout last week that there were no female board members, and who's going to smash through that glass ceiling? I'm pleased to say that Susan Anton and Jeanette Sutton are now board members. Welcome to the board, ladies. Let us know what you want the aircon to be. I don't want this to be an exclusive male-only space.
Can you explain to me what's the deal with what is board members?
Well, you get called
What's the deal?
You get called a board member. That's the primary.
So what do you have to do to be called a board member?
These are pledges of £20 a month and above.
Okay, so you pay £20 a month.
Yeah.
And then what do you get? Obviously, it was nice. You've got a telly profile to have somebody sort of acknowledge you as a board member. That's nice. I'm not saying that doesn't have an intrinsic value
on the board.
Yeah, but what apart from that do you get over and above?
You get to tell people that you're a board member on What Most People Think. You get your name read out when you become a board.
These two female board members just now, have they just had their benefit? Is that what's
happening? No, because that, you know, like VIP members, they'll get their name read out at the top of the show as guaranteed. Board member, let me just tell you about board member, and I'm not making this up on the fly at all.
Okay.
Merch, free merch. I'm going to do some free merch for the board members.
Is there merch? Does merch exist currently?
I will consult the board on this.
I've said this on our podcast. We're in development.
No, I'm going to do merch. I'm going to get What Most People Think pens. They're going to get What Most People Think pens.
So they get a pen?
Yeah, they get a pen. And also, here's another thing that I've just thought, is that when I develop new jingles, I'm going to run them past the board.
How are you going to do that, though?
I've created, you're going to
email them?
Yeah, I've got their names. You know, I've got a little spreadsheet. I have actually got that. So
for 20 quid a month, they get to help
or more.
Do your podcast. Or more, sorry.
About yeah, 20 yeah, big decisions. Above. We've already decided that no adverts ever. No adverts ever. I mean,
yeah, but that was true before even the concept.
That was
of
true.
Came about, wasn't it?
Yeah, and also I did the sums.
And also, what I would also say is, people that aren't board members are also experiencing the benefits of no adverts, right?
Well, I mean,
it's not like I'd understand if it was a tiered system where if you're a board member, you don't have to deal with adverts, but other people do. But nobody has to deal with adverts on your podcast.
What the additional investment has given What Most People Think going forward is the ability to produce bonus episodes. And actually, for the last bonus episode, here's a crystal.
And those bonus episodes are what, exclusively delivered to board members, are they?
No, but they are.
No, okay.
increasing the read. But I did reach out to the board members for input and questions. So they were able to put questions which I answered on the
podcast. They were providing you with content for your bonus episodes that everybody gets to enjoy.
Fair point. But the VIP patrons, they get the guaranteed questions. I mean, pending like issues of bigotry. Like,
appropriateness and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's a legality thing. But they're guaranteed in the Patreon-only episodes. So what we're getting with the increased investment, we're getting bonus episodes which are put out generally. We're getting Patreon-onlys every month and pens.
Do you know what? Can I be honest with you? This sounds like, you know, towards the end of a Dragon's Den pitch when their arse starts to go. This is what you sound like.
I know. I think I agree. I agree. But I also think that eventually it did come together as, I'm glad that you put me through the rigour of that. That's like fucking talking to
Claude. What's the difference between a VIP and a board member?
The VIP members, you get guaranteed shout out at the top of the show. You also
every
get
show.
Well, obviously not every show. That would be how am I going to read out? It's not a fucking register, Ramesh. Do you know what I mean? mentioning a couple of VIP members, Andy Sweeney and Gerald Hall. Now, of course, everybody that joins gets the honour of having us roast their names. I was going to say Andy Sweeney and Gerald Hall sound like two guys. You know when they do like one of those big diamond heists? And you see those kind of like white guy criminals that you didn't think existed anymore.
Yeah. They sound like they should go together. Like that does sound like a bit of an ITV detective thing, isn't it? Sweeney and Hall.
Sweeney and Hall. Or kind of slightly updated Chaz and Dave. They do those attempted robberies and then you just see these guys and you find, oh God, that Costa Brava thing is still happening. I thought that was a joke. I thought that was like a Ron Winston. So Andy Sweeney and Gerald Hall, welcome.
Andy Sweeney sounds like the sort of person that's always described as like a really good bloke. Do you know what I mean? Like Andy Sweeney. Like,
always honestly, both names as well. You got to speak to Andy Sweeney about
it. Have you come across Andy Sweeney at all? Mate, let me tell you something. You've got a group of lads going down a pub.
Yeah.
What you need, if you're worrying about the chat or the dynamic, give Andy Sweeney a call. Trust me, that elevates.
Also,
that.
Regional manager, you're gonna have to speak to Andy Sweeney. Like, I used to have a regional manager when I worked at Blockbuster Video called Andy Dolphin, and everyone always said Andy Dolphin because they like saying some people's names. People just like saying them. Gerald Hall, on the other hand, I mean, Gerald.
He sounds less like somebody you'd want to invite somewhere, doesn't he?
Gerald, no and offense. All, and also Gerald, I would say, is a Hall of Fame who would look at a baby and call it Gerald.
Yeah,
that is
absolutely up there.
Mind you, says Jeff. Who the fuck looks at a baby and calls it Jeff?
Are you Jeff or are you Jeffrey?
Jeffrey, yeah. Jeffrey. Is that, only my sister really calls me Jeffrey.
Did she call you all the time or only when she's annoyed of you?
No, most of the time. Some people try it and, I'm not having that. Jeffrey, because it's minimising, isn't it? As the kids say now.
Did you go to Jeff at school? Were you Jeff straight away?
Yeah. And again, like weirdly, that feels too old for a 9-year-old.
It does weird. Little Jeff.
I mean, you know, my dad was called Jeff Norcott as well. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
So what an incredible, like, I always said.
I'd love it if you were Jeffrey Jr.
Well, I did think, like, just for pure the banter move would have been to call my son Jeff Norcott the Third.
Oh,
like Davis
God.
Loved the Third. That was been so funny, but Emma wasn't.
Yeah.
Emma wasn't into it.
I think that's a bit out of order of Emma because, like, you know, you can just have it on the class registers and stuff. It doesn't have to be referred to as Jeffrey Norcott the Third or whatever every time. Do you know what I mean? But I think it's worth it for the crack, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think
I'm slightly disappointed in Emma, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think as life goes, it's just like one of those. Bit like a really funny tattoo, wouldn't it? But Gerald and Andy Sweeney, welcome to the VIP tier. And there's going to be some benefits coming soon, actually, I'm going to discuss with the board, okay, Ramesh? I can't actually discuss this with you because you're not a member of the board. So this will be... I'll pick this up with those guys. Domain talking point, our CFO of the board, David Domain. Did you get Domain talking point? Was I doing this last time you were on? So it's replaced the cuss count. Domain talking point.
Nice, I like
so
it.
So this
really
is picking up on... I am genuinely happy about this.
I would say you were disproportionately happy. so the quality of the item name, but
I was smiling so much when I said it. It's picking up a point last week. So David writes me a lovely email each week and picks up a number of things, and I pick out one of those. He says... he talks about irksome Twitter cliches. I know you hate this sort of thing. He's given a few recent examples. Like, for example, someone will say, tell me you know nothing about X without saying you know nothing about X. Or,
oh, right, yeah.
This you, and when people find, like, a tweet from 18 years ago, one more time for the people at the back.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I've said something on social media, and somebody said one more time for the people at the back, and they're being supportive, and I just thought, you've got to be blocked man. I can't have that kind of shit. On my page.
There is this weird thing with Twitter and other social media, and apologies, we try not to get too social media centric on this show, but people can kind of communicate with a range of off the peg phrases, can't they? Where other people have actually done the legwork in coming up with funny things, and then people will just suddenly go, Alexa, show me a complete mess of a prime minister.
Yeah, I know.
Who is it? And also,
social media... I'm on it a lot, I would say, too much probably. And my latest vice is TikTok. You've seen it.
We've been working together.
And I'm constantly scrolling through it. One of the things I've noticed about TikTok, apart from I genuinely think creatively TikTok has got its high points are exceptional, I would say, in terms of some of that content on there is amazing. But one of the things that I find slightly kind of annoying about TikTok is its tendency to kind of... It elevate regular people to godlike status because of something they do. Like, for example, anybody in Stranger Things, you'll constantly find montages of them going, can't help worshipping Steve Harrington or whatever. And then it would just be like, and then all of the comments would be like, oh my God, I ship this man so much and blah, blah, blah. But it's just like loads
ship.
Of like.
What is ship?
That's short for worship.
That's
like the new Stan. So it's just like, it's just constantly, you'll just see very average, Steve Harrington, I've got to be honest, I've given a bad example there because he isn't.
No, but someone says they like, two straight minutes of Lorraine Kelly being straight up.
Exactly, that's it. Exactly. Do you know what I mean? Like, 30 seconds of the GC being the goddess we all know she is. Do you know what I mean? And it's just her telling a runner to fuck off. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's...
I mean, yeah, Gemma Connors is another thing I don't fully understand. We had another board member with input, see?
Yeah. Congratulations Steve, on your new investment.
Yeah, Steve Temple, Steve Temple of Doom. That's what I want, his Steve's nice. Temple Very of Doom. So he wrote a message which just talked about a number of things to do with the hot weather and, you know, the way that the word man-made is used and whether there's enough rigour applied to that. But one point I want to pick up on, of what he said is he talked about reporting on hot weather has become a bit hysterical like everything else. Like, is there a case that in the post-COVID era that we now feel like when anything changes, we need the news to speak to us about it constantly and we need advice and we need management, you know, stay hydrated. Could we afford to lose a couple of the people that don't think that they should stay hydrated when it's over 30 degrees? Just as a thought experiment.
Yeah, I think, you know, if people... are not hydrating in the hot weather, I think that's okay. You know, it makes them quiet and tired, and that's probably best for the people around them. Do you know what I mean? So I do think there should be... I think, look, we're all victims, or we're all guilty of commenting a lot when things change, all right? It's just a thing. I just think put a time limit on it. When it gets really hot, you're allowed to have a day, and I'm talking about on the news, and I'm talking about in private conversation. It's the same way that, like... saying Happy New Year after a certain date is unacceptable, right?
Yeah.
If we've had 2 days of sun, please don't comment on the weather anymore. It's that hot. Is, we know it is.
That is timestamp and time limit annoying sort of periodical cliches. I think you'll find a lot of support for this. Email in whatmostpeoplethinkuk@gmail.com, or if you're part of the Patreon, message in. Of course, if you're a board member, then, you know, you've got the hotline.
You've got Jeff's phone number or whatever, yeah.
You've got the hotline. Dick pics, I'll do anything. But I think time stamping that stuff, I actually think it'd be better for our discourse. I've just got to delete something from my hard drive. That sounded fucking awful. What I mean is...
And you said it with such a panic there as well.
Yeah, what I mean is I never have any space left.
Yeah, the police are at your door. So you've got to let yourself be
afraid. That was terrible. Okay, we're just going to do... sorry, I've explained it to the police. They're very understanding. Research. We're just going to do a quick thank you and a fuck you here. I'll do the thank you. And I just want to thank our collective wisdom, because we had a discussion the other day that was incredible, really, where we were talking about eating and being men who, you know, aren't massive men, but have a battle to not be massive. And we both
Ongoing battle, yeah.
Ongoing battle. And we discussed the... You've lost loads of weight recently and looking fantastic, if I might say. But it's
you.
Worked.
Are you allowed to say that? Are you allowed to say that?
I'll run it by the board.
Yeah, no, but I mean, but aren't you... I don't think you're allowed to say you look
compliment
great.
People.
Lost weight in it. I'm not bothered about it. I'm saying thank you. That's the reason I lost weight.
You're flagging a sort of body positivity idea.
Well, there's an argument that you're not, that if you see someone you know has lost weight, you shouldn't default to going. I mean, I do. I'm going to be absolutely honest with you. But you're not supposed to default to you've lost weight. You look great. That's.
No, you're right. We need to balance it out by pointing out more when people have chunked up. I get you. Exactly. I hear you loud and clear. That makes sense.
You still go, you've put on a lot of weight, but you still look as attractive and are as valuable as a human being as you were.
You shouldn't lie. I mean, you shouldn't.
But I'm pretty sure I've read a lot of this. I've read a lot on this that you're not supposed to do this. It's toxic.
Yeah. But this is what most people think. I think what most people think is that people shouldn't be as fat. So on this subject, we were talking about eating. So we spoke about this. It's like the maddest, most creative idea we'd ever had. It was like, I've started, you know, thinking about maybe only eating when I'm really hungry or when I'm hungry at all, actually. And we're both, it's called intuitive eating. And we're sort of repackaging something that I guess humanity should have known for all time is that, I mean, obviously mealtimes have a place, but We were blown away by the idea that you shouldn't always eat if you don't feel hungry. That was
So I've got a couple of embarrassing things to talk about here on this. So first of all, I put on a lot of weight a few months ago, and I to the point where I'll explain what happened. So I was doing I guess we're going to talk about this later in more detail, but I was doing Avoidance, a sitcom I've just done for the BBC. And there was a scene in which I've got to walk into the bedroom and sit by the side of my son's bed and have a little chat to him before he goes to sleep, right? And in that scene, I was just wearing a shirt, a buttoned-up shirt, right? Mm. And Ben Green's the director, who's also happens to be a really good mate of mine, right? So I walk into the bedroom and I sit down, and they're all through the other room, and I sit down and I do the scene, and then Ben goes, cut! And then I walk out and I say, what do you think? And he goes, the next time you sit down for the next take, I think you should have your legs straight out in front of you. And I said, right. I said, why? And he goes, I just think you'd feel better about it. So then I knew, there was an issue with how the shirt was body. But then what happened to compound that, one of the costume girls, the costume department were great, came, mate, it was like she was running to a fire, right?
Yeah.
She came sprinting over to me. She said, Robish, we've decided you're going to have your shirt open over a T-shirt. I just think it'd be better. Like, the panic that was caused, not by the quality of performance, not by the lines being hit, not by the lighting, not by the camera work. It was the way that my appropriately sized buttoned-up shirt was sitting on my torso. That was so I decided... to lose weight. And I tried a number of different things. And one of those things that I tried was I downloaded the Paul McKenna app, right? Which is it Paul McKenna?
He's got some great content.
So in that app, he's got like these things that you've got to listen to before you get asleep, right? So sort of, and one of the messages that you get is, and it seems so mental, but it's delivered with such profundity on this app, right? Only eat when you're hungry, right? That is one of the basic tenets of the revolutionary program. And then I looked into it, and like, it's a thing, like it's a new movement, a relatively new movement called intuitive eating, where you only decide to eat something when you actually feel hungry and you're like, you want to eat something. I mean, the idea that that is like something that people have to be told is fucking mad. But equally, the sort of the idea of like, I mean, it is mental, the idea that you have three set meals regardless of what's going on with you. That is an insane concept, isn't it? So it's like, I mean, I think that obviously comes from a time when, I don't know, people were, they've got so much shit going on that they think that you need to have three set
meals. The only way the workers would get a break, you know, there might be
exactly,
stuff like that.
All of that.
I mean, if there was a thing that, you know, if God wanted to unleash the next meteor, do you think that the fact that intuitive eating had become something like a radical movement would be okay, fire up the big one?
Yeah, if you're sitting there twiddling thumbs thinking, what is going to be the tipping point on me just getting rid of these pricks? I think that would be up there, wouldn't it? That would
He watches a really bad episode of Love Island, then he logs on and reads about intuitive eating. He's like, you know, I think they're done. What about fuck you? Just a quick fuck you before we jump into the politics.
Well, I've got a little bit... Well, listen, I've got mixed feelings about this fuck you because I really do love delivery drivers, and I also think that I actually think they undercharge. I think the amount of money that you pay to basically be an emperor while somebody sort of brings food directly to your mouth, I think it's so cheap for what you're getting. Yeah. So I've got mixed feelings about this, so let's put it that way. Anyway, my children wanted chicken nuggets. Every now and again, they want chicken nuggets. They crave chicken nuggets. And so they like chicken nuggets from McDonald's. They're the right... those are the only chicken nuggets that my kids like, really. Okay, so we ordered them chicken nuggets. The delivery driver arrived and he gave me the bag. And I've ordered chicken nuggets and chips for my kids so many times that I know what the weight spread feels like as soon as they get the bag. Right? So it was quite dark when the guy arrived. He handed me the bag and I immediately knew this wasn't chicken nugget. I knew straight away. And then I looked at the bag and I said to the guy, I looked at the bag and the bag was from Burger King, right? So it wasn't even from McDonald's. So I said to the guy, mate, this is the wrong order. And he goes, how do you know? And I said, because Burger King don't do McNuggets. So then he goes, he panicked and he went, I'll be back in a minute. And he took the Burger King and he drove off, right? So I sort of didn't know what he was going to do. I sort of assumed that the food, he delivered my food to somebody else, but I don't now want that food. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know what his solution could be. Anyway, he got to, 2 minutes later, I get a phone call from him and he said, hello. He goes, I've got some bad news. And I said, what is it? And he goes, the house that I delivered your McDonald's to have started eating it. And I said, okay. And then I said to him, well, I don't know why I said this. I said, why? And he said, oh, because they didn't realise. And I was like, okay, well,
They fucking did.
Yeah, I've ordered for three children. It's obviously two people there that basically feel like they've hit the fucking lottery. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and remember, McDonald's is on balance better than Burger King as well.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, what are you doing ordering for Burger King in the first place, right? But this is the fuck you moment, right? So all of that I understand. People are human. They make mistakes, right? And, you know, I'm not paying enough for Deliveroo. I said to him, he goes to me, I'm not sure what to do now. And then I said, well, neither am I, but I don't think it's my responsibility to provide a solution. And then he said to me, can I ask you something? I said, yeah. And he said, do you like Burger King?
Can I ask you a question? Just top of my head, unrelated. How do you feel about the thing that I accidentally bought you?
How do you feel about just having a Burger King lucky dip, right? and I can guarantee you it's worse than what your McDonald's order was because this other family have taken it, right? So so anyway, it's just a little bit of a fuck you to delivery drivers. I love delivery drivers, but just this one guy in that instance thinking that was a solution.
And so I bet you, knowing you, you still gave him 4 stars, right?
100%.
Okay, we're going to talk about the politics right now. Okay, the Tory leadership race is hotting up. But again, timestamp it. We're recording this Thursday at lunchtime, so things might have moved on, developed. One of them might have been summarily executed in the gardens at number 10. You just don't know. Sage is out. No more power stances. He wasn't a very good communicator, Sage, but I want to draw your attention, Rom. I don't know how much you're across this guy. He's Raymond Chisty, the MP for Raynham. who arbitrarily and from nowhere and under no pressure or desire from anybody joined the leadership race 2 days before the main ballot, right? He comes in, he basically releases a video that he's done on an iPhone 4. It just says, like, in such a half-assed way, it was hilarious. No, I just feel like it's time for Raymond. Got a lot of ideas and that, and, you know, just, I think, you know, expect the unexpected sort of thing. So just before the first ballot, he drops out because no one is going to nominate him.
What do you think was his motivation for that? Because, like, so if you think about it in a logical kind of, you know, if you're going for a job, like, for example, I don't know how many of these you've done. You know, when you're going for an audition, I've had like a couple of auditions for things that I've got no right to be going up for, like a movie or something like that.
Yes.
Right? So it's so outside the realms of possibility that you might get it. What you do is you think, I'm going to give myself the best possible chance of getting this, right? So you work hard, you set yourself up, you prep your ass off and you deliver the best that you can. And in my case, you still don't get it. But what I'm asking is, that's similar to the position that he's
yes.
in. Why has he gone the other way and absolutely half-assed it, I guess?
So there's a thing with Tory leadership races is that sometimes it's just a profile-building exercise. So kind of come in, you sketch out if there's any support for you. Some people might go, oh, bloody hell, dear old Raymond got 7 nominations. That's more than I'd have thought. He needs to be a next junior minister for fuck knows what. So that's the thinking. What I think... what's so funny about this is it seems like no one was thinking the same thing. And then when he dropped out before the actual votes, he thanked his team for the hard work they put in on the 2-day campaign. There was no team, Ramesh.
Yeah, it's
there
was one no person holding the iPhone for him.
Yeah, exactly. It was his wife was the team. She's not even into politics. She doesn't even vote Tory. She held the iPhone. And then when they said to him, you know, can you disclose how many backers you had? And he said he didn't feel it would be sensitive at this stage to disclose it. And I thought it was interesting because he's probably true. It's sensitive for his own mental health, right? Because
he
didn't have any backers. So poor old Raymond was out. I mean, sadly, in a way, more embarrassing. Like, he's held, like, high offices of state. He's been chancellor and he's been a health secretary.
But he hasn't got it, has he?
Nah. Do you know what I mean? When he talks,
he just does not... have it. And it's like, you know, you can be as, you know, you can be as effective and as principled as you like, but you just look at that guy and you go, you ain't got it. You cannot be the leader, right?
Well, the whole thing with the power stance thing is a bit like something that we already know from comedy, is if somebody kind of does a pose on a punchline, there's a reason. So the Sag power pose, but I said I'd never call him Sag, but I feel bad for him this week. So poor old Sag is out.
I had an embarrassing situation where I had an interview with, I think it was the Times or something. And like, you've done these where they do a photo shoot with you and then do the interview afterwards or whatever. And during that interview, during the photo shoot, I was just chatting to the photographer and he was like, sort of getting, and I started talking about the Tory power poses and Sag's power pose. And I did it. Like, just to demonstrate, he took a photo and that's what they use in the interview.
My God, what? I mean, you're a bright guy. They're like, how did you not? How did you not know?
So,
like,
I know, mate. So I bet
it's a funny photo, but only with the context that you were doing it ironically. Pretty Patel, like Sajid, Pretty Patel is another person, you know, very high profile. But not liked. Deep levels of unpopularity among both her colleagues and the membership and the wider public. So she's sort of like
I imagine close friends and family.
And she's sort of like the triple threat in the worst way possible. So we had the first round of 8. Nadeem Zahawi got knocked out. Great story. Shit communicator, I would say.
Not
very strong. I mean, like, to not be able to capitalise on that story and the way that his family arrived.
Yeah. It's like not even making it through the auditions on Britain's Got Talent, isn't it? That kind of backstory.
Yeah, he was like one of those guys that turns up and says, I've been a professional singer for years, and then Simon Cowell thinks that this is the first time he's ever sung in public. He's one of those guys. Jeremy Hunt, again, this is one where you get, like, this is where the social media sphere can surprise people, is that Jeremy Hunt, the kind of guy that would get traction with journos, they like him, he reminds them of people that he knows, he's quite moderate in a way, he's quite Remain-y, he's a bit like Rory Stewart. he gets fucked off out of it. I mean, it turned out he had to borrow a few votes off Rishi just for his own dignity to even be. But that's the rumor. That's the rumor.
Yeah. Nice of Rishi though.
Weird of Rishi. I suppose there's rumors that is it Sir Gavin Williamson? I mean, the least fucking worthy sir. Of the exams fuck up guy. Imagine, you know, they talk about like peers and stuff. They go, isn't it out of order that some people are peers because in 1412 their dad owned some land? Well, Gavin Williamson, what did he do? Do you remember the exam fuck up of 2020? A lot of people don't know. I was across that. Penny Mordaunt seems to be the front runner. And it's funny, earlier I did a tweet and I sort of said, you know, she has her blind spots, but of the three candidates, I think the public might find that Penny Mordaunt might seem most prime ministerial. I even put the word seem. Of course, people are like, what are you talking about? She's fucking... I was like, yeah, like, I qualified this a lot. I just think at this point, when people actually get to the point of hearing these people speak, she's got great hair, Rob. I mean, I'm beating about the bush. She's got fucking amazing hair. Rishi's got great hair too, got great bone structure. Liz Truss, there's a weird thing I've got with Liz Truss is I can never remember what she sounds like. Like, even a second after I've heard her speak, I'm like, what does she sound like? Is she a Northern Ireland? Does she sound like Thatcher? I don't know.
Do you know Rishi's not doing very well on TikTok? You know that, don't you?
Isn't he?
You know the clip of him going, I've got upper-class friends, I've got working-class friends. No, not working-class friends. Have you seen that? You've seen that? That has gone huge on TikTok. That is... And lots of duets. Do you know, like, of just sort of random celebrity... You know, I don't know if you've seen the TikTok duets where you just... You duet the video and
you
it's
get
just
split
you,
screen, yeah.
Split screen, and it's just lots of people sitting there like just doing a funny face as Rishi says that. I mean, he's not done well. TikTok has done for him.
Well, ironically, that would be the place that him with all his branding, he would have thought that would be the home ground. I mean, I've got to say, and not again to be an apologist for a Tory, I always think a tightly clipped 9-second clip, I always think I want to know what was said before and immediately after that thing. So, yeah, there's definitely a sense in what he's saying that it's a bit elitist. But he also then goes on to talk about they cut it just before the point that he talks about going to do work in inner city schools and, you know, talk about social aspiration. And it is funny, like a lot of the comedians sharing it, the same comedians go like, don't cancel us for stuff that we said in the past.
I know. That's a really, bloody hell, that's a good point. That is a great point.
What are we, 47 minutes in, I've made
a,
you know.
That is a great point.
And then and then they're sharing something the geezer said when he was 20. I mean, he's not my pick, but I don't think necessarily that, you know, when people say, well, he's too rich to know how to handle a normal person's budget. The problem with that is the flip side of that is going, well, he was too poor growing up to know what it's like to handle a big budget. No one would fucking dare say that.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. There is a thing about like, there is an argument that his kind of level of privilege makes him better placed to deal with that sort of thing. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I know that's it's a difficult thing to say or whatever, but like, do you know what I mean?
I hope you get quoted on it in the Express, but
yeah, well, don't clip this up, but like,
Tom Tugendhat. People, I mean, one of the weird things about the Tory leadership race is a bit like the Olympics, whereby people found out about a thing like a week ago and suddenly they're like its biggest fan. And you know what I mean? They're just chatting about it all the time. He's like the dressage of politics. People are going, I love Tom Tugendhat. Yeah, you didn't even know about Tom fucking Tugendhat till last week. Will you still be Tom Tugendhatting when this is all done?
Yeah. I just feel like it's somebody naming it. Like, you know when somebody goes, actually, you know when somebody's trying to talk about hip-hop or something, they go, actually, Kendrick Lamar isn't the best in the field. It's actually LaRussell. So...
Yeah, he's like the connoisseur's choice. He's the connoisseur's choice.
Yeah, saying it to be cool. Saying Tom Tugendhat to be cool.
He looks like a manager of a sort of middling Foxtons, doesn't he? You know, the guy that he comes into twice a week because he's across a couple of other branches. Tom Tugendhat. And then we come to, and this sort of that brings in the idea of diversity, is Kemi Badenoch. I would say, like, the value in communicating, of getting your head up and talking off script is fucking phenomenal. Like, a lot of the right like her online because she's very, you know, she's quite, like, anti-woke and stuff like that. But I just think, just as a communicator, Penny Mordaunt's the same, as they get their heads up and they speak. But... one of the interesting things is like how rattled the left are that there's a black woman that might become prime minister, leader of the Conservative Party. And there was one left-wing commentator today that said that Kemi Badenoch would be, as Prime Minister, would be a disaster for diversity. Now, I think you can make an argument, and those raised eyebrows were exactly right, but you can make an argument and go, well, their policies might not be good for black or brown people. I think you would at least have to acknowledge what a fucking radical act it would be to have a black woman as Prime Minister of Great Britain. If you even think back 20 years, how distant that prospect seemed, you cannot discount it, right?
I just think that... And look, I've made jokes about this in the past, as you know. I got called out for it, for saying that... I made a joke saying, after seeing Sajid and Priti Patel, I'm all for there being fewer Asians in politics. Or I sort of tweeted that as a joke.
Very obviously a joke, I would say.
Yeah, it was a very obvious joke, but and got some shit for it. But I think that the truth of it is it's such an insane argument. Like it would be so incredible for diversity. I just think that you can't pick and choose what your diversity looks like. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it is, even if you completely disagree with her and you think she's evil and you think she's horrendous or whatever, even if you think she's the worst thing around, you cannot deny that her being Prime Minister would be a great thing for diversity. In isolation, regardless of anything else, it's so counterintuitive to me. Do you know what I mean? It just doesn't...
It's self-defeating, and it kind of... it's bad for the left. I'm not saying all people on the left think this, of course not, but there's quite a decent number that do. And imagine if that were to happen in Britain and the news went round the world, of Britain that elects female Prime Minister, and then they were to have to get their heads around the fact that some people on the left saying this is really bad for diversity.
What the fuck?
I think they've got the wrong headline mixed with the wrong...
I mean, just imagine that said the other way. Do you know what I mean? If that was said by somebody on the right about somebody on the left that maybe been Prime Minister, it would be insane. Do you know what I mean? You'd get absolutely slaughtered for it. Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's one of the big problems with the left is like the sort of, there are some people that climb up to the moral high ground, stand up there and go, oh, I think I'm going to dive off this face first. Yeah. Even though there's no water in the pool. I think as a white middle-class woman who made this statement, like, if you don't think through the optics of telling black or Asian people what views they should really have, if that doesn't like, at least there's a little like an alarm flag that goes off in your head as you're composing that tweet, then
Chris Rock said it when Barack Obama was elected president, and they were saying, Chris Rock said something along the lines of, everybody's saying that this is equality, but Barack Obama's really good. I think we achieve true equality when somebody who's black, who's as shit as George Bush, gets in.
Okay, we're just going to do a quick hype here. Two new Patreons, Simon Downs and Robert Jones. They're the other two accomplices in the failed diamond heist, aren't they? They're the ones that didn't get out to Gran Canaria, that were just picked up in a pub.
This podcast really has quite a complicated hierarchy to it, isn't it? There's lots of tiers in this management structure, isn't there? There's Patreons, there's VIPs, there's board members, there's peasants. There's serfs.
Simon Downs and Robert Jones. I think that they would be picked up after the raid in a pub in Deptford. They never quite got on the ferry. Whereas our guys at Graham earlier, he was already on a flight to fucking Malaga.
They've got a little bit of a lower league football vibe about them, I would say.
Yeah, lower league football vibe criminals. People actually pay for us to insult them like this. It's fantastic. Just while we're hyping stuff, obviously I'm at the Edinburgh Fringe. I am at the Edinburgh Fringe. In fact, not obviously at all.
It feels like a crazy move, to be honest.
It's fucking insane. One thing you can guarantee, and you can back me up on this, is having now regretted being there, I will actually make sure the show is amazing, because that'll be all I have for 2.5 weeks, and I'll know the risks of plunging lower.
I went to Edinburgh 1 year with a show that was slightly undercooked, I think. And I remember having almost the edges of a panic attack on the first night. You know, we're like, the rooms in Edinburgh, you're often just in sort of a curtained off box, aren't you? So you're very close. As the audience arrive, you are actually incredibly close to them, although they can't see you. And I do know that the one thing that you have, you just have to make sure your show's banging. And I know you will, Jim. I had a thing where when I was doing my first Edinburgh show, I was in like one of the underbelly rooms, and it's like a really tiny room, and the stage was right by the curtain. And I was really nervous then, because when you do your first Edinburgh, there's a lot of attention on you. Do you know what I mean? Yes, it's sort of like, and then that kind of goes away But like the, so the first Edinburgh, I was really nervous, and I was like doing a lot of things that I thought at the time was sort of me being comfortable on stage, but actually I now realise were the symptoms of anxiety and worry about how the month was going. But I remember once, like, one of the things was that latecomers would walk in right in front of the stage.
Yeah.
And so it was quite disruptive. So I'd start the show, they'd give me clearance to start the show, and then you just get like 10 or 15 people in. And so one day I just thought it'd be really funny. I sort of signaled to the audience that I was going to like scream in the, I said really quietly in the mic, the next latecomer that comes in, I'm just going to shout in their face, right? Because he's pissing me off now. But it was really funny. The curtain pulls back. And I screamed, "Where the fuck have you been?" really loud in this guy's face. And he was blind.
Okay, on that bombshell of screaming at a blind guy, we're just talking. We are. I do need to let you go fairly soon. We're just talking about work. You know, we're talking about the industry now. So you've just done, you've rapped on filming two sitcoms, the first of which, Avoidance, is available now on BBC iPlayer. It's going out on BBC. It's excellent. Obviously, people should go there and check that out. And then, obviously, there's a one on Sky that you did with Catherine Ryan. I just thought it's interesting to let people know about how fucking long it takes. I mean, like, Avoidance was obviously like a very clear passion project. So how long ago did you first start thinking about that?
2017, I remember, because I was working with Ben Green, who's the director, co-writer, we're working on another show in the States. And we had this idea, the starting point basically is like this guy's character flaw was the starting point. We just thought it'd be good to do a sitcom on this. And then we just started knocking the idea about for years and years and years. Like we didn't work on it solidly, but we wanted to get it to a point where you could present it or decide what channel it would go on. So that I'd say those initial couple of years of working on it was down to us because we hadn't showed it to anybody. But I would say between pitching it to the BBC and getting them to agree a script to the show coming out, I reckon you're looking at a lead time of 2.5 years, I think.
Probably. 2.5 years.
And so then... so that means they ask you to come up with the treatment and then they commission the script, you write the script, and then if they like that, you start discussing whether you're going to do a pilot or not, and then you write all the scripts, and then you get notes. But like all of that, then you get to the point of agreeing budget. For, you know, all of that stuff takes fucking ages. It takes absolutely ages. So like when you say it's a passion project, in my opinion, any sitcom that anybody ever does has to be a passion project because it's like so hard to get it on TV, man. It's like, it's really difficult. It's made me feel like, you know, we've all talked about sitcoms that we think are absolutely shit. It's made me now just be a lot more forgiving of whatever I see on screen because you know the process.
Or how the fuck, given all those barriers, how the fuck
did
it get on air?
Did this make it to the script? Yeah.
Yeah, how the fuck did it get on air in that state?
Yeah, I know. I mean, that is another good point. That is another good point. But like, it's hard.
I mean, so you were obviously, you know, all across it, imagine like producer, executive producer, yes. Stuff like that. So you're across it all levels. So when it comes to like being on set, how hard is it to kind of get all that out of your head and just deliver what you need to deliver in the moment? Because you're sort of thinking, how's this scene going? You actually wrote the scene. You wrote the lines that you're saying. You wrote the lines that the other person's saying. You were involved in the casting. How hard is it to just shut all that out?
I would say I find it easy to shut all of the other stuff out in the scene. The thing I would say is, in Avoidance, the cast are like really, they're all really accomplished actors, like Jess Nappet, Lisa McGrillis, Mandeep Dhillon, they're all amazing. And so there is the nerves of what they're going to say about the scene when they come in. Do you know what I mean? Because they are reading lines that you've written. And we were very open to sort of being collaborative on it. And so if there were certain things that they felt not comfortable saying, then we'd happily change it. You hear about some writers that insisted on it being like the very sort of rhythm of it being exactly as they were. We lacked such confidence in what we'd created that we were happy to sort of let people do it however they wanted. So there is the anxiety of like the beginning of every day I found incredibly stressful because I was waiting to see what they thought of the scenes. Do you know what I mean? You're sort of like going, are they going to come in and go, "This nobody would ever do this. Why have you written it like this?" Do you know what I mean? They wouldn't say it as bluntly as that, but you know when you get that message in a polite way. The thing that I had to make a concession for is as a producer, executive producer, whatever, like, you know, it was done for our production company, I had to not be told about anything that was going on production-wise while I was filming, because
that's a good
point. I just couldn't. You can't concentrate on performing when you've got that stuff going on. So it'd be like, I didn't mind being told at the end of the day, like, we sort of, and everybody was really good at this. If something was going on, sometimes I'd never find out, and they'd tell me when after it had been sorted out. And sometimes at the end of the day, and that wasn't because I'm like a diva. Well, not entirely because I'm a diva. But
no, you want to focus on your thing. But did exactly. Some people ever give it away just in the level of stress when they communicate with you? Hey, mate, eyes fucking bulging.
It happens so much. Like, so many times, like, I would say something like, so in the next scene, we've got this, like, Chinese token, and I kind of want it to be like that. That you got that message, don't you? And you can see, like, the person obviously realize none of that has been sorted out, and then go, yeah, cool. And then later on, you hear that they were crying under a table. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I'll tell you what is quite funny is hearing about how you're spoken about. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So because it's our production company, and because, like, you're an exec on it, people, like, are worried. You don't realise that people are worried about what you think about what's going on. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, that you're saying that you're worried about what they're thinking of the script. Yeah. I thought it was the other way around.
So I started taking in a water bottle on Romantic Getaway, the show that I did with Catherine, right? This massive water bottle. And I would leave it, like, just because I'm so forgetful, I'd leave it from place to place. And apparently somebody told me the panic that would happen on set about getting that water bottle to wherever I was going to be for the next bit. It was just like, for somebody, that became a real stress, right? So then I just had to start being more careful about taking my bottle with me, because, like, people just going, I don't know, like, Romesh obviously has brought that water bottle in for a reason. He wants it with him at all times. Like, we've got to make sure, like, it was so
they want to. I've said this before, people want to believe that about celebrity.
Yeah,
and then 100%. when you start taking it with you, and then that worries everybody, because they're like, oh my God, he's fucking furious, seething. There was this this famous story about, along those lines, with Sylvester Stallone. It was this rumour that he hated waiting for lifts. And so someone was at a hotel, and they were going to do an interview of him on the sort of terrace bar on the top floor. And they were like, they said to the journalist, you know, Sly hates waiting for lifts, okay? So we're going to give you the sign, you have to arrive there, somebody's going to just wait and hold the lift, and then you just get in, and then... And then it turned out so he walked out of his room and there was a lift there. He went, oh, hey, another lift. And it turned out that he had spent years thinking he was really lucky with lifts. But what happened was, like, once, years before, he'd just gone, I hate waiting for lifts. Who doesn't hate waiting for lifts? And then, because people need to believe in the mythology of stardom.
Yeah, yeah.
They got Sly Stallone does not wait for a lift. Okay, you be here at 1:01 p.m. or we're not doing the fucking interview. Getting off in the past. So what I'm saying is just watch it, Rom. You could be the lifts guy. Just quickly,
I wouldn't mind a story going around about me.
It's worth getting a few going.
Just one. Yeah.
I mean, the water thing is a bit low status, but I'm sure we could.
As mythology goes, that's not up there.
It's fucking water bowl. Okay, just one letter, and I do want to talk to you about this one. This is from Harry. Just quickly, he says, hi, Jeff, you have two dogs, right? I have three. We walk... All right, mate, it's not a pissing contest. We walk them a lot, but sometimes they shit in the garden. In the hot weather, I'm not always aware exactly when or where they've shit. Recently, a few shits hung around longer than they should have, and there were flies. Our neighbour knocked and legitimately wasn't happy with us adding to the summer fly problem. However, in capital letters, now they are evidently watching out of the window, and within minutes of the dog shitting, they're knocking on the door to ask when I'm going to remove the shit. Should I accept this as a consequence of my former failures, or just punch them in the face?
Well, my question would be, how many shits are you allowing to be in the garden to the point where your neighbours notice an increase in the summer fly problem?
Because, like, it's not good.
You sort of intimated, the sort of suggestion, the inference there is that there's like a two or three that you've left out and about. But for people to notice an increase in the fly population in the area, that suggests that that's a big issue, right?
I agree. That's traded off against how they're acting now. So... I mean, this guy might be managing the info. Maybe this happened several times. But anyone who's now at a stage where they're looking out the window for shits sounds like the kind of person that could turn a mountain into a molehill in the first place. I think you might have to move.
I think so too. I mean, look, the truth is...
I don't know how you come back from this.
One of the things that you can grab solace from is that you've put those people in a position where they watch, look out the window to see if a dog's taken a shit or not. I mean, that's what their life is. And that, in a way, is the best, sweetest revenge. Yeah, you have won that.
Because... Get some fake shits on the hottest day of the year. I think it's coming up next year. Literally just put like a comic up. I'm talking like about 46 shits in the garden. And just let them just keep knocking.
I would leave one of your own out there. Jimmy, just mix it up.
So, yeah, we've given you two very workable suggestions there. Either take it up a notch or move. I think that's fair.
Yeah. Good luck.
Okay, Romesh Ranganathan, I know you're a busy man, and thank you for being busier for this. I'd advise all people to watch, obviously, Avoidance, and look out for Romantic Getaway when it comes out on Sky. And, well, I'll probably see you quite soon, but for the purposes of the podcast, thanks very much for being on the podcast.
Thanks so much, Jeff. Thank you for adding to my workload. Love it, mate. Cheers.